This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are talking to Yong Hao Chun, the Group Managing Director of the particle boards and furniture maker Hiviboard Berhad. Now, Hao Chun, welcome back to the grill. I think 2 years ago you were with Melissa Idris. You talked about a lot about your business at the time, but things have changed. I think this year so far, you're down about 45% on a 12-month basis. Your share price has been pummeled. Lots of headwinds from labor shortages to selling prices to demand, etc. Let's dive right into it. And talk about how this weak ringgit is basically manifesting itself in the operations of the business.
Yeah, good morning, Chuang. It's good to be back. So to answer your questions, when I was here about 2 years ago, things was very good. And of course, things also change very rapidly. So as to why this is actually happening, so last year, I think it was actually the start of the challenging year for us. Reason being that the raw material, because we do particle board, our main raw material will be rubber wood. So rubber wood actually has gone up by more than 50% since the beginning of last year until now. So that has actually been a major significant impact on our operation. So of course, beside that, the strengthening of the Malaysian ringgit or the weakening of the US dollar has also an impact on us. So these two main factors is actually affecting our operations.
So you said weakening US dollar. I don't understand, because right now the ringgit is at 4.07 to the ring to the dollar, and it's one of the worst performing currencies versus the. So if you sell a lot of your product overseas, surely then a strong dollar is good for you?
Well, you have to speak of it comparatively. So like the beginning of last year, it was at 4.4. So towards the middle of the year, it went down to maybe 4.2. And in the first quarter of this year, it actually went down even further to probably 3.8 something. So with that, that would have actually a very huge impact on our export sales.
So two things. The weak ringgit at the time when you mentioned 4.4, that was quite isolated, because historically, the ringgit hasn't been that weak until you discount many, many years ago. So first of all, was it an isolated case where you're on a year-on-year basis, you're reporting weak numbers? And secondly, when you talk about, for example, the fact that you've got high rubber wood prices, what are you doing to address those high rubber wood prices?
Well, you see, the rubber wood prices was being pushed up last year by a few factors. So it's a combination of all the factors that actually drove up the rubber wood prices. So one of it was that the weather was extremely wet. The latex price was very high as well. So that actually encouraged people to keep on tapping the rubber tree rather than actually having them replanted. So on top of that, it's also that the competition, because at the beginning of last year, everybody was doing well. So the competition for the wood was extremely high as well. So all this actually drove up the rubber wood prices. So to address that, I think we have been a pioneer in trying to see how to maximize the rubber wood recovery. So for the past 7-8 years, we were the first one to start with the mobile chipping. So with that, we have been able to actually maximize the recovery of the rubber wood by another 20-25%. So with that, we are actually ensuring that we have additional source of supply.
So less wastage, you're saying, right?
Yes, less wastage. Yes, that's right, precisely.
Okay, what else are you doing to address the volatility of rubber wood prices? Is there, for example, a plan to go upstream and to grow your own trees?
Well, that is simply not possible for us, because we are a big consumer of rubber tree. So basically, in one day, we will be requiring more than 20 acres of rubber plantation. So with that sort of size, so we can't possibly be looking at having our own plantation unless we want to divest into plantation business. So for the time being, that idea is off. So so what we have been concentrating is always on the maximizing of the recovery. So for now, I think last year, we have actually further improve the recovery by being able to use the root of the rubber wood. So rubber wood, you know, the root is embedded underground, so it is a very dirty, contaminated with sand and stone and so on. So nobody would be able to actually use it in a significant way. But for us, we have invested quite heavily in the recycling machines. And through technologies, we are able to actually clean and make this sort of a useful fiber. We are able to recover it for our production use. So we are the first one to actually go into this as well.
Okay, so I guess there must be a limit to how efficient you can get in terms of processing rubber wood. Mm-hmm. And it looks as if the volatility in rubber wood prices are here to stay, unless, of course, you tell us as an organization, either you're going to go upstream into planting the trees themselves, or you find alternative wood sources. Or is it purely only rubber wood that you can use?
No, we are able to use all sort of woods. So in fact, our mix is always a majority of a rubber wood for about 80%. So the other 20% is actually some of the wood residue from sawmill and so on. This could be actually from the tropical wood base. So this has always been the case. So we actually chose to go more on rubber wood because rubber wood is more homogeneous, so it's easier for us to control the quality and so on and so forth. So we still prefer rubber wood. And also rubber wood is actually a renewable species, because you know that glove, they use a latex, so you need to have a continual support supply of a latex. And also furniture, you need the wood. So rubber wood is actually a renewable crop. So I think to see how to maximize the recovery is still the key point to this.
Well, of course, some of the rubber glove makers have gone upstream and bought their own plantation so that they can grow the latex themselves. Mm. But you know, the other thing that you mentioned as well is that a year ago, your numbers were predicated on 4.4 ringgit levels of the ringgit to the dollar, and now they're much lower, 4.07, I think, in last count. Mm. Does that mean that being one of the two biggest determinants of your revenue, your profit performance this year, that this is just a one-year isolated effect from an accounting perspective?
Well, you see, a US dollar is going to help us to be more competitive in the market. So the customer, if there's any windfall or appreciation in the US dollar, so the customer will always come back for a price renegotiation and so on. So our past performance has shown that it's not entirely that our improvement in the performance is actually coming from the US dollar, but it's through the product differentiation that we have been doing as well. So we have been doing higher quality boards and so on, so that would be able to give us a better margin, better competitive advantage and so on. So actually about 40 to 50% of the improvement in the result for the past 2 years are coming from the differentiation. So the rest, maybe 50 to 60%, are coming from the US dollar. So we do not 100% or totally rely on the US dollar to give us that sort of boost, you see.
Okay, let's talk about the differentiation in a few minutes, but let's talk about another headwind right now, and it is your heavy reliance on foreign labor. I think in your latest quarter, you had to rely on, I guess, contract workers to come in and supplant the deficits in the local labor workforce. How are you managing that particular headwind?
Well, this is true for our RTA furniture segment, which is our actually downstream. Well, last year we were quite badly hit by the shortage of workers. So yeah, you're correct that we have to actually rely on a lot of temporary contract workers. But for the furniture division, you have to see in a sense that for the past few years, I think how they have grown is that from a revenue of lesser than 200 million, 100-something million 7 years ago, up to more than 300 million for last year and the year before last year. So with that, you can see that our number of workforce from 100 over million up to 300 million actually increased by a mere 20% only. So that has to do with a lot of the initiative that we have undertaken with the automation. So automation is actually a one way forward for us to actually be less reliant on the foreign labors. But given our size, we still need at least a certain basic number of workers. So I think we can't have anything lower than 2,000 workers. So I think now we are at that level. And also with the approval for new foreign workers coming in, so in the short to medium terms wise, I think that should not be a problem for us. But in going for the longer term, the continuity in the automation will be the way forward.
Okay, well, in terms of labor as well, there's also the looming specter of minimum wage. And if and when, and in fact, when that happens, it's going to spike from 1,000 ringgits a month to 1,500. And of course, that's going to have a direct and discernible impact on net profits. How are you going to address that?
Well, of course, that is going to have some very significant kind of impact on us because we have more than 2,000 workers. Of course.
That means a 50% increase in wage bill, right?
Yes, you're right, yeah. So to mitigate that, like what I mentioned earlier, the automation is still having a lot of room for us to actually look into it. And also, I think the increase in the workers' wages and so on is not something which is unique only to Malaysia. Places like Thailand, Vietnam, whereby most of these furniture factories are actually situated at, they are also facing with the same issue. So I think it's just something to do with how we are going to manage the situation.
How are you going to manage it? Because it seems almost an impossible task, you know, because you are labor intensive. You need people. And then by law, their salaries are going to rise by 50%. You know, so for investors of heavier board at this point in time, they've had a bad year so far, 45% down in the year. Mm-hmm. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I say because of last year, for the fourth quarter and the first quarter of this year, our RTA division actually made a loss from the operation.
RTA standing for Ready to Assemble Furniture.
Yes, right.
So furniture,
yeah,
right?
Correct, yeah. Which basically is a Hiva Pack. So they actually make a loss for the past two quarters because of the workers' issue. So with the workers' issue, is like a double or triple kind of a whammy because the US dollar kept on weakening, so we do not have enough workers and we can't actually ship up the shipment on time. So we defer the shipment because when we negotiated on the price, it was probably at 4.2, 4.1. And when we actually ship out the shipment, it was 3.8, 3.9. So the impact was from this. So basically, all this actually caused our operation to go haywire. But the good thing is that with the approval of the new workers, for the short term wise, so the backlogs and so on has actually been resolved. But going forward, okay, so like what I mentioned just now, the RTA sector has actually grown tremendously for the past 7 years. So from 100 million up to more than beyond 300 million, but only with 20% increase in the workforce. So that the key point is that the automation, so it is still something very relevant, and we have to actually keep on automating the process so that the reliance on the workers will be lesser.
We're talking this morning to Yung Hao Chun, the Group Managing Director of the Particle Board and Furniture Maker, Hivya Board Berhad. After this, Hao Chun, we're going to talk about strategy, we're going to talk about hedging maybe, and we're going to be talking about new business areas. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
We're talking this morning to Yung Hao Chun, the Group Managing Director of the Particle Boards and Furniture Maker, Hivya Board Berhad. Now, let's take up from where we left it off and how you're susceptible to so many factors which sometimes are out of your control, like the foreign exchange translation, the labor cost, labor supply. You know, have you considered, you know, more accounting-based measures to mitigate some of this volatility, like, say, for example, foreign exchange hedging?
We always have a forward hedging policy, not entirely, but probably up to maybe 40% or maybe a maximum 50% of our export sales. So that is actually to cover our position. So should the currency actually fluctuate within certain range, so at least we have time to react to that. So yes, we are doing that, and we find that useful to actually cover or to protect our position so that we have sufficient time to react to whatever volatility in terms of the foreign currency.
Yeah, but equally, you can make the wrong call on hedging levels. I mean, the airlines are notoriously dependent on hedging fuel prices, but sometimes it can go against them, and it can be very, very, very expensive. How do you make sure that your hedging levels are prudently positioned?
That's why we never hedge our 100% of a position. So it's only about half, or most of the time it's less than half. So that is actually giving. We are not here for speculation. We are not here to actually gain from whatever volatility in the forex. So we just want to cover our position. Let's say if this contract is entered at this level, so at least I know that it will be transacted at whatever level that I have a hedge for. So if you go ups and down, so we do not need to be worried about that.
And then automation. I mean, you said that at this size, you can't do with less than 2,000 workers. But you said automation is one way to mitigate dependence on labor. How many more people can you not do away with, or can do away with? And what is the zenith of this automation from where your business is concerned?
Well, I say, last year, we expanded further on the RTA side. We built another factory. So that factory is supposed to be able to actually contribute additionally 20% to our to our top line. That is the impact of it, because we have a more capacity, but we have a lesser workers. So that's why last year the performance was actually impacted by this new expansion as well. But like what I've mentioned, the automation is still something that is very doable, because we have shown from history that with automation, the top line is able to practically grow by a good 80%, but the workforce, we have only increased it by 20%. So with our size, with our sheer size, we still need at least this basic number of workers, which I think is in the region of 2002 to 2003. Okay, we need that much.
So it seems, Yao Chun, that a lot of the big factors that are impeding your performance, whether it's on foreign exchange direction, or whether it's on labor supply and labor costs, for example, you can only go so far in terms of managing the downside there, right? So from a strategy perspective, how are you thinking of even repositioning the business?
Well, in fact, we are doing something similar to the upstream, which is on the panel side, the board side. So at the furniture side, we are also differentiating ourselves. We are going into some of the new furniture range whereby not many people, or very limited amount of people, are actually doing that. So we are actually in the midst of introducing a certain new range of a furniture product, whereby they are unique in the sense that the method of construction and the method of assembling the furniture is totally different. So this is quite innovative. So by doing so, we are able to actually command a premium, because nobody else is actually going into this market yet. So these are the sort of things that, because when you have a new range of a product to be introduced, you are less competing. You are competing lesser with the rest of the manufacturers. So these are the way on the marketing perspective that we have been doing to actually stay ahead and to actually maintain our margin and so on.
I think you might be referring to your NAF line of product. I think this is the particle board with no added formaldehyde.
That's the particle
adhesive
side, but what I have been talking about, the different furniture range, is actually on the RTA side.
Okay.
Yeah, on the HEVA
side. So talk about these new product lines and what it could mean from a profit upside perspective.
Well, because when you enter into the market, so you always have to deal with the customer in terms of our pricing and so on. So if you are offering something whereby a lot of people are offering or able to offer, so the pricing pressure will always come. Okay, they compare on the price other than the quality and so on. So what we have been doing on the upstream and also on the downstream as well, so is that we differentiate ourselves in terms of quality and also in terms of new innovative product ranges, so that with that we are able to actually have a much better premium or the pricing command compared to others, a range of a common product. So this is able to help us to be indifferent as well.
We're talking this morning to Yung Hao Chun, the Group Managing Director of the Particle Board and Furniture Company, Hivya Board Berhad. Now, some of these high-end products, higher margin type products that you've been discussing, what kind of margins are you going to be enjoying with these products? You know, and I think more importantly, what kind of costs are associated with entering a new market, whether it's in terms of branding, whether it's in terms of positioning, whether it's in terms of additional sales outlet costs?
Well, of course, when you try to introduce some new product into the market, there will be some new startup costs, market penetration costs, like advertisement and so on. Or sometimes you will even have to sell it at a very competitive price for the customer to gain acceptance into the new product and so on. But this is something that you have to do for any new product that you are coming up with. So, but for the longer term, this is definitely something worthwhile for us to look into, because this give you the niche whereby people or the customer would be able to use this product for their marketing advantage as well.
So when I look at your numbers, I think the forecasts for a drop of about 40 million ringgit for 2018 to around about the low 500 million region, right? This is a consensus estimate from analysts, mm-hmm. which I've put together.
Okay.
And pre-tax profit somewhere in the region of 51 million ringgit, down from 66 last year.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, it's not huge, but it's still an on-year decline. Are these numbers in the ballpark?
Well, it's difficult for me to see what is going to happen next, you see, because the market at this moment is rather uncertain, because one of our main export market is actually China.
That's right.
And China, now you know very well about the trade war between US and China.
So how does that affect you? Worst case, best case?
Well, by right, it should not be affecting us much, because all of our customers in China, they are producing for the domestic market. They are not re-exporting to US. But with this sort of trade war going on, a lot of those who are actually exporting to US, so they have to take some mitigating measures.
Price cuts, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So maybe instead of exporting, continue to export to US, so they have to actually sell it in the local market. So in that sense, this will actually create some uncertainty for the local market. So our buyer will also be affected. Okay, so although we should not be seeing that sort of a direct kind of impact, but I think that is enough to actually cause some knee-jerking effect in the domestic Chinese market.
So what about bright spots? I think your smaller business would be the ready-to-assemble furniture business, right? I think about a fifth of revenue, give or take, is RTA.
Oh, no. In fact, the top line wise, RTA is actually more. It's about 55-60% from RTA.
But from a net perspective?
Net perspective, yes. The particle board or the upstream is more.
It's about 80% of business, right?
I would say probably about 60.
60? Okay, yeah, 60. So the numbers have changed a little bit.
Mm.
So in terms of, you know, less negative spots, I think a lot of your RTA, 63%, goes to Japan.
Correct.
And there's kind of like a long-term catalyst with the Olympic Games in Tokyo coming up in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
What does that side of the market look like?
Well, Japan has been stable all this while. But the thing for Japan is that there will be peak and off-peak season. Okay, so it's always a little bit difficult for us to actually manage the peak and off-peak. But so far, we have been dealing with the U.S. for so many years. So we are able to actually adapt to the changes within the year rather okay. So but for U.S., Japan, the demand or the market has always been very stable and is still on the increasing trend.
Okay, well, I guess we've nearly run out of time, but you know, it does appear that your short-term, even medium-term outlook remains, I guess, challenging, for want of a better description.
Mm.
Can you leave investors with, well, I mean, what message do you want to leave investors? And even as major shareholders yourselves, are you doing things to shore up the share price, maybe do a share buyback, for example, or do some capital management?
Well, we have been doing some share buyback previously, but I think that is not something that I want to concentrate very much on. You know, our company is still a net cash company, so
that's
we
right.
do not have
very
much.
Little debt, yeah.
Yes, we have very little debt. So I would rather continue the dividend payment trend.
Historically, about 45%?
Of the net,
yeah.
Well, we have a dividend policy of not less than 35%, but we have been paying much more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think instead of a share buyback, I'd rather actually pay consistent kind of good dividends and let the shareholders think of it to see whether our share is actually worth supporting or not. So I'm not going to do the thing, but I'll let the shareholders do it.
Okay, nice matches. Thank you so much for your time, Hao Chun, and good luck with the roadmap.
Thank you very much.
We were talking to Yong Hao Chun, the Group Managing Director of the Particle Boards and Furniture Maker, Hivya Board Berhad, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's Mobile Data Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.